now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning. Welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. I'm Jim Russ on Tech Talk Radio. Today we're going to talk about the feds and tracking your cell phone. We'll also talk about Einstein. Was he wrong? And some news about the Hadron Collider. Also in Profiles in IT, we're going to talk about some guy named Moot.
And now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We brought him back for a new year.
Yes,
indeed. I figured he was a goner.
I did, too. You know, because he was kind of messing up there right at the end of the year.
Like he didn't care anymore. So I don't know.
I hope they didn't give him much of an increase over the...
I think they had a talking with him.
I think they need... Got an email from Margaret. Dear Dr. Schertz, I own a Logitech Squeeze Box Internet Radio, and when it works, I really like it. But it is having issues. There are times when it simply loses connection or signal. I don't know how to troubleshoot this. Is it the radio or is it my megabits per second upload-download speed through my Verizon Fios service? I did several speed tests a few days back, and my speed was really low. Four megabits per second download and 1.73 megabits per second upload. Do I have an effective radio or do I need to hand over more dollars to Verizon to get a speed upgrade? How do I know if that will actually improve my radio performance? I only use the internet. I don't use Verizon for TV or for phone, just for internet. Thanks, Margaret, a regular listener in Bethesda. Well, Margaret, I'm glad to report that you have enough bandwidth for simply listening to audio. That doesn't take much bandwidth, actually, and you're only using download bandwidth when you're listening to the radio, and 4 megabits per second is plenty of speed for audio. So I don't think that is really an issue. Now, what may be an issue is that, you see, Verizon Fios does not guarantee bandwidth. So there could be times and moments when all of your neighbors are on the internet streaming YouTube videos, and your effective bandwidth could go down depending on how many people are sharing the network, and so it kind of goes up and down depending on the load. And I've noticed that. And like if you test it in the middle of the night, it's always much higher than it is on Saturday afternoon, for instance, when everybody's playing games or downloading YouTube videos.
I never heard of this device before. I was just downloading it on the web to see what it looks like. That's pretty cool.
The Logitech Squeeze Box Internet Radio is very nice. It's a Wi-Fi device. And what it does, you can basically go and pick up internet audio streams using this device, and then it has a great amplifier and speaker system, and you basically have a radio that's streaming songs from or streaming internet radio stations through the internet, and it has been very effective. It has great reviews, very good reviews.
It looks pretty cool.
Now, people have...
And they're not expensive.
They're not very expensive, no. And what people have said, they really like the sound. They like the way it sets up the connection. Many people don't like the... Like, you can use it as a clock radio, but they said it's so hard to adjust it using the touch screen or using the buttons that people really didn't like the controls. But just as a straight radio, it's gotten great reviews. Hmm. Now, I think your problem is actually with the Fios speed varying through over time. What happens, I also have Fios, and sometimes my Fios internet will just stop coming through, and I've got to go out to my router and reboot it. And when I reboot it and it comes back up, I get my internet back again. So occasionally, my router loses the connection with the main network node. And then I reboot it, and it resets itself, and I get it. You could log on to it, and you could ask for a new IP address, and you could do that. And that happens occasionally, and it really shouldn't happen, but it does. So whenever I have trouble having internet access, I just unplug my router and plug it back in again. which I think you could do that. You just there's a power connection on the back of that router. Just unplug it, plug it back in again, and it will take it probably a couple of minutes to reboot, to resync, and your radio will get back on again. And then I would start paying attention as to whether at what times it's dropping off. But I suspect it's just variability of your Verizon Fios service. And unless you're willing to pay for guaranteed bandwidth, which I have to tell you is very expensive, you're not going to fix this problem. And I don't think getting more bandwidth from Verizon is going to help you, because that will simply increase the upper limit that they'll let you get. They won't throttle you down if you pay for more bandwidth, but actually the lower limit is unchanged. So when everybody's, when there's no bandwidth to go around, it's still going to choke out.
Well, it doesn't matter if everybody else is using that in the neighborhood. It doesn't matter how much you have available, right?
It doesn't matter
it's
how much. It doesn't
slow.
Matter how much capacity they let your router go. So when you buy more bandwidth from Verizon, what they do, they just go in and they reconfigure your router, and they just basically change the upper limit on the bandwidth that's allowed. So, but it's a great device. It has gotten great reviews. So. Hang in there and try this, just rebooting the router to see whether that fixes your problems when you have a problem. We have an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'd like to recommend that you showcase Christopher Sogian. There's an article about him in Wired December 11 issue. He finds security flaws and privacy issues and makes us think about them. Hopefully you'll find him worth showcasing. On another note, I went to your Tech Talk website on Tuesday, December 27th to get the link that you sent in an email, but you've revised the whole website. I got this message when I clicked on email the show. It said, Foxfire doesn't know how to open this address because the protocol email to is not associated with any program. I'm using my work notebook to write to you and to visit your website. I contacted my firm's help desk, and they said they couldn't resolve it because it was your website. Best, Lauren, in Bethesda.
Huh.
Well, Chris Sogian is a good suggestion. I looked at him. He's actually a local guy.
Really?
So I'm gonna feature him in a future show. And he has actually created. He's kind of a privacy expert on the internet, and he has highlighted various privacy issues with companies, and he's gotten them to change their practices. I think he'd be a good guy to talk to. And there was an error on the website. We did release a new website recently. It's
funny. A tech show with an error on its website.
Yeah,
I find that humorous somehow.
So we actually set up a whole new CMS, content management system at the back end, Sitecore, and we've got it hosted on the cloud. So we actually upgraded the underlying technology substantially, and then we did a lot of rewriting of the pages and added more graphics. And actually, when you click on the email Tech Talk, the button should have said mail to colon with the address. And whoever actually put that in, they put email to colon, and that was incorrect. So we deleted the E and just have mail to, and now it works properly. So thank you for noticing that error. We had that fixed within 5 minutes after you sent in your email.
That's funny. I'll bet I know who it was that messed that up. You want to know who that was?
Who was that?
I bet it was this guy right here that messed it up. Because he's...
There's a letter
I bet
in your...
Yeah. He was the one that programmed it?
Certainly, mm-hmm. Yeah. He's trying to... Because he doesn't... He's trying to keep, keep the workload down. He's trying to keep the workload down. He's like a union operator.
I didn't say that.
We got a letter from Robert Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, just thought you would like to know that I keep getting this warning message when I try to download the Tech Talk podcast from iTunes. The URL, http://mp3techtalk11119, cannot be found on the server. I'm not having problems with any other podcast that I listen to. On another topic, could Tech Talk do a profile of Mark Rusinovich in Profiles in IT? I recently read a book, and he wrote a book called Zero Day, and it was great. I understand he also works for Microsoft. I think he'd be a great subject. Thanks, Robert Taylor. Well, Robert, actually, we're going to feature Mark on today's show.
I was going to say.
That was a great suggestion.
You got enough ideas from our listeners to get to the rest of the month, practically.
That's right. It makes life so easy for me when I've got listeners to make suggestions. Mm-hmm. It was a great suggestion. We're going to feature Mark on today's show. Now, actually, that original podcast file for the November 19th show, in fact, did have an error. I had an extra I mistyped the link to the show because I write the podcast file myself. I have to say I made the error. I can't blame it on Mr. Big Mouth.
I think the doc is covering up because this guy is the one who screwed it
There's
up.
There's a letter in your mail.
He was doing a lot of work for us over the holidays, and
I just can't stand crying and gnashing of teeth in the next room. So I'm not going to blame him for any more. So what happened was when somebody else actually sent me an email about this, and I went back and checked, and then I found the error in that link, and I changed it. Now, what you have to do, though, is reload the iTunes file in order to reload it so you get the new corrected link. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can always just put in... You can always get the show directly with the link, and all of the shows are actually at the same address. It's stratford.edu/mp3/techtalk with the date. In this case, it would be 11/19/11.mp3.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be stratford.edu/mp3/techtalk 11/19/11.mp3. So you can always get it directly, and you can always get the link from the show outline that we'll upload as soon as the show is over today. And thanks for listening. That was a great email, and we fixed that problem. So see, everybody's highlighting problems on
this. Did we break anything else this week?
I don't know.
I think we're done with that.
I think we're down with it. We're done with it. I couldn't put any more error messages on the show. We have an email from Arnie. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I found several secure websites to store passwords and related passwords. LastPass.com, KeePass.com, RoboForm. My questions are, how secure are these sites themselves? Some are cloud sites. Which ones pass your screening or are any used by the Stratford staff? I have another question. If you buy an encrypted flash drive to store your passwords, does a computer... that you use to enter the passwords on the flash drive, keep the password somewhere in memory so that somebody else could access them. If so, this defeats the purpose. And finally, what is eToken and how does it work to protect sites? Does Stratford use eToken? Sorry, no physics questions this time. Hope these questions aren't too lengthy for the program. Merry Christmas and love Tech Talk, Arnie McKechnie.
Frequent listener and writer.
From Davidsonville, Maryland. Well, so many questions. Let me give you a quick answer. First of all, I would not really store, by preference, my critical passwords on the cloud. I'd like to keep them close at hand,
mm-hmm.
where I know absolutely who's on the site. Now, there is a password encryption program that you can load on your computer called KeePass, KeePass. It's open sourced, so people believe that it's quite secure because a lot of people look at the open source code, and it's free. And you can use that as a vault to store your passwords, and it's right on your computer. There's another program called RoboForm, which actually you had listed here. Is the third one you listed, RoboForm. That's actually not on the cloud. It's actually a program you load on your machine. That's $29, and that actually has also gotten great reviews. But I'm going for KeePass. It got great, great reviews, and it's free. Now, if you're a Mac user, you can try OnePass. OnePass was really highly rated by the Mac users. That's also a program that you can put on your computer. And that's $39 for a desktop version, or if you want a mobile phone version, it's $15. Now, as for cloud storage, this LastPass.com, which was the first item that you listed, LastPass.com, had got great reviews. It's only $1 a month. You can store your passwords on the cloud, but that's just not my preference. I'm not comfortable with that, although... I didn't see anybody that criticized LastPass.com security or any security breaches. I just would rather not have my passwords out on the cloud. As for an encrypted thumb drive, now this gives you even more security because you can actually put them on an encrypted thumb drive. Then, you know, if your thumb drive is not even plugged into your computer, there's no way anybody could get to them. So if you're really paranoid, that's not a bad idea. You can get a good encrypted thumb drive for around $60. The nice thing with an encrypted thumb drive, if you lose it, nobody can really even get at it because it's encrypted. The data is encrypted. And so usually people use encrypted thumb drives when they carry very classified data or highly sensitive data around with them so that if they would lose the thumb drive, somebody couldn't have access to it unless they had the password. Now, as far as eTokens are basically it's a thumb drive device that plugs into the USB port on your computer. It's actually a device that plugs into the USB port. It's designed to hold a public key infrastructure, a PKI security certificate, which is an electronic certificate that uniquely identifies an individual rather than a computer. And it's and so a rough analogy would be like e-token is part of the electronic identification card that is completed or enabled when you enter your password. E-token's about the size of a house key, can be kept on your key ring. So it's a very good way to authenticate users that log in remotely to verify that they are who they are. And when they pull the e-token out of the USB port, that computer is completely disabled. It can't do anything. It can't make any of the connections. It's just not allowed. So that's actually a good—we don't actually use much remote access, so we're not using e-tokens. But it's a very robust and highly used system for companies that have a lot of remote logins and they want people to operate. We have an email from Santa's girlfriend. Now, I actually didn't know that Santa had a girlfriend.
I think Mrs. Santa would like to know that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what I should say about that.
Probably nothing.
Merry Christmas to Dr. Richard Church and all those who make Tech Talk come together and educate and inform the listeners. Wow. Santa's girlfriend really likes us,
yes,
Jim.
Yes, she does.
I have a job that my place of work that allows me to work out of my home. Now, we don't really have enough room to be located at a brick and mortar location, and so they've given me a laptop to work remotely from home in my home office. But the problem is, my laptop, after about 15 minutes, goes to the Control Alt Delete screen. In other words, it logs out. And you've got to hit Control Alt Delete to have to be able to put in the username and password. After 15 minutes, he says, "You know, I'm fed up with this. I'm sitting at home. I'm the only one there. I go to get a cup of coffee. I come back. I got to log back in again. I want to disable this thing." Now, I called the firm's help desk, and they said this is a firm policy and it can't be changed.
Wow.
I do like my job, the company, but this policy is a waste of my time. Are you aware of any workaround? Or I realize I'm really daydreaming. Of course, it's not worth losing my job over this, but am I just stuck with this? Happy New Year, Santa's girlfriend.
Mm.
You know, she's just a little bit frustrated, wouldn't
yes,
you say?
Yes, she is. I would say she is.
I don't think Santa's around enough. He only shows up once
okay.
a year.
I'm not even going there.
Your system administrator has implemented a very good security practice. You see, they don't really know where you're going to use your computer. Your computer could be used in a public area.
Starbucks, and you could leave it
Starbucks,
sitting on the table.
And somebody could steal it.
Right.
And so what happens is that you've really got to be able to make it so that the system logs out. And so I think you should just be thankful that they gave you 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because people could do an awful lot of stuff in 15 minutes.
Sure.
I mean, they could have given you only 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can override that. I don't think you should override that. And I think they certainly have a valid policy there. And I've heard some logout times actually less than 15 minutes. So I think you should be happy with that. We have an email from Margaret. "Dear Dr. Schertz, I continue to have applications with this application." She's actually talking about Windows Live Mail. "On an earlier Tech Talk show, you mentioned a website or resource that's the best place to learn all the features of Windows Live Mail. I went back and read it a couple of months of postings of answers that you gave on the air, but I couldn't find that answer. How do I do a word search for a topic on any of your prior shows? Please repeat the source that lets you learn all about managing my Windows Live Mail 2009 version running on Windows XP. My biggest problem is deleting old emails, which is a way I could set it up to automatically delete any emails that are over 4 months old in any of my 9 inboxes."
Oh, my gosh.
She has 9 emails that she sort of consolidates with the Windows Live Mail. A big Tech Talk Dr. Schertz admirer, Margaret. Thanks.
Wow, lots of fans
today. Yeah, lots of fans today. Well, actually, let's talk about this search thing for Tech Talk first. An internal search for Tech Talk content does not work now with the new website. I'm going to add that to the new function.
Oh, good.
This is the third website deficiency. I'm going to add that to the website, and so that you can actually search all of the content for the old shows. That would be very useful.
I find it very useful.
Now, it turns out that you can use Google search tools just to search Stratford.edu. So you could, for instance, put this in the Google search engine, Windows Live Mail, and then space, type site, colon, stratford.edu, and it will search for Windows Live Mail only on stratford.edu. Now, here's the problem. We just went from the old website, and so that shows all of the Windows Live Mail listings on the old addresses of the old website. So every one of the links that that comes up with now is wrong. So, but in the future, if you want to search just a website, let me get you just put in the keyword you want to search and follow up with site colon and then the name and then the domain name of the site, and it will just search that site. It's a very good idea. Now, let me give you the answer so that you don't have to do all that searching since it's so difficult for you to search. Go to windowslivehelp.com. WindowsLiveHelp.com. It's got everything you'd want to know about Windows Live Help. Now, as to having a function that automatically deletes emails after 4 months, I don't think you can do that. I think you're going to have to do that manually. Yeah. There's really no automatic way to do that, so you're just going to have to manage all. But you can put them all in one big inbox, and you can delete them all together. So there you go, and thank you for that email, Margaret.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, back in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we are going to feature an individual who started 4chan by the name of Moot. M-O-O-T.
Okay.
It's all lowercase, Moot. He did not want his real identity out in the open because he felt anonymity was the key.
You're just about to change that.
I know. Well, it was actually published a couple of years ago by Time Magazine. Mm-hmm. Moot is also known, when he talks to his mother, as Christopher Poole.
Apparently he does that a lot.
He says, Chris, what in the world are you doing?
What's wrong with you?
He's an American internet entrepreneur from New York City. He's noted for founding the website 4chan, and he most recently founded another website called Canvas. Chris Poole was born in 1988 in New York City. There, you know, I could find very little actual information on him because he wants to keep his private life really private.
Seems so.
I mean, he was living with his mom until he was 23, so I don't think he wanted the 4chan folks to know that.
That doesn't do a whole lot for your street cred.
No, Poole started 4chan on September 29th, 2003, out of his bedroom in New York City. At the time, he was 15.
Sorry.
He was 15. Now, 4chan, it's 4chan.org, the number 4, C-H-A-N.org.
Mm-hmm.
Now, He did it anonymously, and his screen name was Moot, always with the lowercase. Now, he was interested in setting up 4chan because he wanted to duplicate a discussion board in Japan that was very popular, 2chan. This was the number 2chan. And 2chan in Japan was dealing with his animimes, you know, these cartoon characters. And so it was a site where people would post images of animimes, they would change them, and it was extremely popular in Japan. And he liked animimes, so he wanted to bring them to the U.S. He said, okay, if it's popular in Japan as 2chan, I think I'll start 4chan here. Because he wanted to just 2-up them over what
gotcha.
They had. And so he started
2chan.
So he started 4chan.org on September of 2003. And then at the urging of his friends, he basically set up an image board system that was far more sophisticated. And that total image board system launched October 1st, 2003. Now, one of the key elements of 4chan is that all postings can be anonymous. You don't have to reveal your identity. And this is kind of a major feature of 4chan. You can go on there, say whatever you want. Nobody knows who you are. There's really no control. You cannot even own a username. So you could log on as like Radio God, and then somebody else the next day could just take Radio, say they're posting things for Radio God, and nobody knows who really is the Radio God, you know. So it's, but then they figured this doesn't really matter because everything is anonymous. And the second thing that it has is that there is no memory to this. Discussions are not archived, so they just roll through constantly. It's like a stream of consciousness. Maybe there's only a day's worth of stuff up there, and it just kind of rolls through and sort of and the funny thing is people will repost stuff that was actually up just 2 days ago with like a slight modification.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got this sort of this dynamic fresh look to it that actually people like. Now some people didn't like somebody coming in and stealing their name like Radio God, so they had what they called trip codes, which could add a certain ability of a user to sort of keep a name. And what happens is, after you put in your name like Radio God, you put in the number symbol, the number, you know, the hash mark,
right.
And then you put some phrase, you know, like Mary Had a Little Lamb. And then there's a hash program that takes Mary Had a Little Lamb and it turns it into a code. So it appends your Radio God with this code, and only somebody else could use that code if they knew that you used the phrase Mary Had a Little Lamb. So that provides a certain degree of security. But since there are a lot of hackers there, only one level of hashing is fairly easily hacked. So you could actually put 2 hash marks and do double hashing, which is called the secure trip code.
Hmm.
And so some people that would like to own their handle will use the secure trip code. Now images and comments now appear under 44 topic headings. So you can go to that, Jim. You can go to 4chan.org.
I think I'll do that right now.
And these topics range from fashion to sports to video games to weapons to paranormal to sexy, beautiful women. And the most popular forum is the random forum, which is the /B forum. The /B form, it's not, you just say anything you want. There's really no rules. And that probably about a third of all the posts on 4chan are on the B column. And the people that are like, always like to post on the B column, they call them B-tards.
Great.
And you go on there, it's like a stream of consciousness. I mean, and there's a lot of bigotry on there.
I'm noticing that.
You really cannot also go to 4chan at work, because it's bigotry, slander, pornography, all sort of wrapped into one, and it's a stream of consciousness. And occasionally what happens out of all of this, there will be some idea that sort of emerges, and then people say, hey, that's kind of interesting. You remember that thing called Rick Rolling?
Yeah.
That came out of 4chan. In the somebody, you know, in the random thing just posted the first Rickroll. Then somebody liked it, somebody else did it. Pretty soon it went viral and everything was Rickrolling. Then have you ever seen these things like these LOL cats where you got a picture of a cat with some sort of misspell?
Stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out in the random column, people started posting pictures of their cats on Saturday, and it became known as Catterday. And then somebody put a misspelled caption on it, and it became the LOL Cats, and that went viral. So there's a lot of stuff that actually has come out of 4chan, and it's been known as the meme factory. This is like Rick Rolling. LOL Cats are called memes, and they sort of like grow out of this thing. And what Moot believes is that this purely anonymous, open architecture where you can say anything you want, there are really no rules, really leads to sort of a creative ferment out of which come a lot of good ideas. But there's probably 95% garbage there. And the people that actually use it, they sort of go there and they'll sit in the B channel like they're going to the treehouse. And they just sort of sit there and they just kind of make comments all day. Then over time, things emerge.
These people would probably not have jobs, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it is. and you see, one of the groups that came out of 4chan was the group Anonymous. They all met on 4chan, mm-hmm. and of course, this is the group of hackers that started attacking anybody who they felt was trying to censor them. So, so there are a whole series of attacks by Anonymous on whenever they, against any perceived slight against the community. Now, 4chan has been called the anus of the internet.
Yeah.
So it's probably, there's a lot of stuff there that's not so savory, but it actually is a cultural phenomenon. And so what happened was Time Magazine, actually it was around 2008 when Moot's real identity was revealed as Christopher Poole in a July 9th, 2008 Wall Street Journal interview. Now that same day, Lef Grossman of Time published an interview with Moot's on Moot's influence as the non-visible administrator of 4chan. And in March of 2009, Time placed Moot's persona in the 2009 Time finalists list of the most influential person, and then they wanted an internet vote. Now, this was quite interesting because after the vote closed in April of 2009, Moot was voted as the world's most influential person.
Interesting.
However, it looks like 4chan had hacked the vote.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And what they did, they actually, not only did they make certain that Moot was number one, they controlled the order of the first 21 candidates and the order that they were winning. So the first letter of each of their names spelled out certain memes within 4chan. So the first letters of the first 21 candidates spelled Marble Cake. Of course, M was for Moot. Marble Cake, also the game. And these were memes that were common on 4chan at the time. So it was clear that they just owned this entire event. That notwithstanding, Time Magazine still named him the most influential man of the year.
Great.
That year.
Wonderful.
Now, prior to the Wall Street Journal and Time interview, Moot kept his real identity separate. He told Grossman, "My private life is very separate from my internet life. There's a firewall between them." Now, in February 2009, the Washington Post did some investigation. They reported that he attended the Virginia Commonwealth University for a few semesters before dropping out. They also reported that he was still living with his mother in the apartment, which might be why he didn't want to have the word out.
Right.
Now, he actually had in 2010 a TED presentation, where he went and gave a TED presentation. He had been highly, highly critical of Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook because he said, pure anonymity, being anonymous posting is the way to go. He doesn't think tying your identity as Facebook does or as Google does to actual person, physical person, actually is good because then it inhibits what people could say. So he's highly critical of Facebook. But the problem is, and as he related to an interview that was conducted after he made his TED presentation, he can't make any money because the postings on 4chan.org are such that no advertiser wants to be associated with them.
Oh, of course.
So he can't sell any ads.
Well, just looking at it from here, it's a website about nothing.
Yeah,
really. I mean, it's marshmallow. It's there's no it's nonsense.
It's a website, but he thinks it's beautiful how order comes out of chaos. I guess you've got to spend a lot of time on 4chan
to see
it.
I'm not
going to
give you that kind of time.
I also think it could be an age thing. I actually have the same feeling that you do about.
I think you're probably right. It's people that just don't have now other
in 2010, he actually raised $625,000 to create a new online enterprise, Canvas. In his interview in 2009, he revealed that he was living with his mom, and he was $20,000 in debt because he'd been using his credit card to pay for the bandwidth for 4chan.
Oh.
And, you know, and his mom, you know, and he says, what does your mom think of this? He says, well, you know, my mom really doesn't like the content on 4chan.
Really?
She doesn't actually understand it. And she's not happy that I don't have a job and I'm spending all this money and that I dropped out of college. So he decided to start a new venture called Canvas. Now, Canvas is where you can post images. It's canv.as. canv.as is Canvas. And he raised from VC $625,000. Now, what is interesting, and this is kind of an admission that you do want to have.
Oh, my.
I'll explain Canvas in a minute. Canvas is much better than 4chan.
I'm not so sure I would agree with you on that.
Okay, canv.as. Now, what he did, I mean, he realized that people that can't log on, I mean, they have total anonymity, many times will totally mess up a conversation because they just throw out crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So what he did, he made Canvas tie into the Facebook API, so you actually had to have a Facebook identity before you could log into Canvas. It's almost like it sold out to Mark Zuckerberg. But he realized that having this first cut at getting rid of the people that weren't ready to reveal anything about themselves got rid of a lot of the garbage. So he's now thinking that he can make money on this thing, and he got investors that'll put $625,000 against it. So now Canvas opened January 31st, 2011. It features digitally modified images uploaded by users who self-identify using Facebook Connect. Now, this is the thing. You upload an image there, and these images hang around for a while. Then if you like an image, you can take and copy an image that somebody else has loaded into an image processing program that's built into Canvas. You can modify it, and you can upload it again with your modifications. So you get kind of a gradual morphing of images.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
It's totally bizarre.
And some of these GIFs in there are just really quite peculiar.
I didn't even get off the front page because some of the images are going to stay around for a while in my mind while I'm trying to sleep, and that's not a good thing.
Now, at the TED conference, this was after he had raised the $625,000, he was proud to announce that he was no longer living with his mother.
He's living under a bridge abutment.
So, way to go, Moot, a.k.a. Christopher Poole.
Oh,
I think he has stepped into something which indicates something about the impact of the Internet on our social interaction.
I think he stepped in something that smells really bad is what he's done.
I'm not going to say anything about 4chan.
Wow.
So that's all you needed to know about Moot and Christopher Poole.
Well, we certainly have taken a walk on the weird side this morning.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio coming to you from the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University over one of these fine radio stations. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, and WTOPFM HD2 Washington. We'll be back in just a moment with your chance to win free food for the correct answer on the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
That's right. It's me, Jim Russ, here on Tech Talk Radio from the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Just moments ago, if you were paying strict attention, you heard that we were talking about Christopher Poole, the guy who created Canvas and 4chan. Well, before he created Canvas, it is rumored or reported that Christopher Poole, also known as Moot, went to this university in the Virginia capital city of Richmond. If you know the name of that university, call us now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Your chance to win free food from the Escoffier at Stratford University in Falls Church or the Cafe Karim at the Woodbridge location of Stratford. Again, the number is 877-936-9333. Call us now on Tech Talk Radio.
A judge approved warrantless tracking of suspect's cell phone.
Ooh.
This is actually quite significant. It's a small case, but it could have large ramifications over privacy issues. The decision was issued by U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth of the District of Columbia and said that the Stored Communications Act does not require investigators to get a warrant based on probable cause to access suspects' location history pulled from cell phone towers. Now, the ruling is based on his interpretation of cell phone calls as wire communications. And under the statute, records involving those communications are subject to less burdensome standards requiring the showing that the contents are material to an ongoing criminal investigation. The ruling, which was unsealed on Wednesday, came as a surprise to civil liberties advocates because it disregarded a federal appeals court ruling from last year that soundly rejected the U.S. government claim that it didn't need a search warrant to track suspects using GPS system location tracking devices. I mean, this seems like, so you could track your smartphone using GPS data or from triangulation with cell phone data. Now, it seems like it's really the same data they're going after.
Mm-hmm.
So this judge said, okay, that ruling only applied to GPS positioning data, but not to cell phone triangulation. He says cell phone triangulation, it should be tied to the rules relating to wired transfer. Now, the appeals court judges previously said that the surveillance of the suspect's movement were so prolonged and extensive that it was barred by the Constitution against unreasonable searches. This was the findings in the GPS case. In this current ruling, Lambert said that the cell site location information was significantly more limited, and therefore the Maynard decision didn't apply. I tell you, privacy lawyers really do not agree with this decision. This makes it clear that we must get a revised digital privacy law in place. So many of our laws are written before we had these cell phones. There's a huge amount of data in the cell phone, and the question is that data publicly available without a search warrant, or do you need a search warrant to get it?
Right.
And I think there's going to be many more court cases related to this coming up in the near future. This week, record iPhone sales, as you would expect.
Yep.
AT&T and Sprint, Nextel, both said that the new iPhone helped drive record single-day sales for each carrier. Sprint said it reached its best-ever day at 10 a.m. best-ever at 10 a.m. on the day that the sales opened. And AT&T said it had its best-ever day as of 1:30 p.m. on that opening day.
Mm.
The new iPhone, despite the lack of major redesign, continues to be a tremendous draw, outstripping demand for any other cell phone. The iPhone 4S drew lines at the Apple stores, so there we go again. Verizon Wireless, meanwhile, would only say that the sales were brisk and steady, with steady traffic all day. I decided to wait about a week.
I don't get this whole let's stand in line because it's out for the first day thing. It's a waste of time, don't you think?
I'm just not that much that into that. You know, I finally did decide to get the iPhone because it was global. I could get both GSM as well.
That's what you were waiting for.
I was waiting for that, and so it was really, you know, I was nip and tuck between the iPhone and the Android, but now that the iPhone's got the global features, I'm going to go for it.
Buy a battery charger to take with you, too. You're gonna need it.
I'm gonna get one of these extra batteries. These external batteries you can plug in. Some folks at work have that. They just watch the battery just drain.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
It just goes. You know, Wi-Fi. If you turn off Wi-Fi, your battery will last longer.
Yeah, I don't. Mine's not on. Only when I need to get on the web does the Wi-Fi come on.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't stay on in the background without you knowing it?
No.
Okay. That's a good feature. Apple came out with the iMessage texting service. Now, this is kind of interesting. It actually allows you to send a text message to another iPhone owner or an iPod user or an iPad user.
This is sort of like the BlackBerry feature, right?
Yeah, and the text message shows up as far as your carrier is concerned as just an email. And when the email arrives at either the other iPhone or the iPad or the iPod, it actually converts the email into what looks like a text message.
Huh.
But the difference is that text message doesn't count as a text message in your carrier's text message
uh-huh.
count. So they're cutting out the carrier in this thing. Now, if you use iMessage and send it to a non-Apple device, it goes out as a text message and it costs you. So now, you see, there are already things like Google Voice that actually are avoiding making phone calls using the data. So you're seeing a transition into the use of the data features of the smartphone and away from the paid services that the carriers are trying to provide. That's the same thing that happened with landlines. So, you know, at home I've got a Verizon Internet coming into the house, but then I'm using voice over IP. I'm using Ooma, which is a whopping $10 a year.
Yeah, I know.
And I've got unlimited calling anywhere in the U.S., and I've got calling all over the rest of the world for like two, 3 cents a minute. So the same trend is going on here with smartphones.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think it's all just going to be the delivery of just pure data, and the services are not going to be able to sold at retail. It's kind of a long-term trend.
This is Tech Talk Radio coming to you from the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. We'll be back with more tech news right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And the Nobel Prize for Physics was awarded to the two gentlemen that discovered the fact that the universe is expanding at an accelerated rate.
Mm.
It turned out that Einstein's error, or so he thought was an error, turned out to be correct. Now, here's the story. Albert Einstein...
Didn't you tell us a few weeks ago that it might not be correct?
No, that might have been something else.
It was something else.
Yeah, it could have been something else. Einstein published his theory of general relativity in 1916. Now, this theory of general relativity said that, you know, the universe is either going to be expanding or contracting. It just can't sit there motionless. If it's sitting there motionless, the theory, so it would be predict, would actually, because of gravitational attraction, it would start shrinking, you see. And so if it's moving outward, it would stop and it would start coming in again. And so there was no way for the universe to be static. But when astronomers looked out at the sky, it looked to them like it was static. And so Einstein said, I must propose an adjustment to my theory if it's actually static. So it meant that he'd have to tinker with his formulas. He needed a force that was a repulsive force that would counteract gravity. So he basically put in a cosmological constant, which was a new anti-gravity force, and he put that in the theory, and that predicted that, in fact, you could have a static universe. But shortly after that, Edward Hubble came along and did further observations, and he discovered that the universe was not stationary at all, in fact, that the universe was expanding, that it was moving apart. So Einstein was ecstatic, and this actually led to the Big Bang Theory, because if it was expanding, and if you just project those paths backward, they would all go back to one point, indicating the Big Bang. Well, Einstein was ecstatic when Hubble announced these results because it meant that he didn't have to have this correction. And so he dumped the cosmological constant. It wasn't needed after all because the universe was expanding. In fact, Einstein went to Mount Wilson, where the observatory where Hubble was, you know, did his observations in 1931, just to shake Hubble's hands and to thank him for saving relativity from the cosmological constant. And Einstein denounced this constant as one of the greatest blunders of his life, but his pronouncement was premature. In the mid-1990s, two independent teams of astronomers, one based in Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and the others at observatories in Baltimore and Australia, one was in Baltimore, kind of a homeboy, they decided to find out about this expansion. And so they did. They had bigger and better telescopes than Hubble, and they decided to use supernovas as markers. Supernovas are these huge explosions in space, and they were going to track these supernovas to see how fast they were moving as they went deeper and deeper into space.
It's not like Carl Sagan, deeper and deeper.
Yes, and by measuring deeper, by millions and millions of stars. And so by measuring the speed of these supernovas as they went further and further and further out, They discovered that the expansion of the universe was not slowing down at all, but in fact, that it was speeding up. And the only way that you could predict a universe that was accelerating at a faster rate, instead of slowing down as it expanded, was to add in Einstein's cosmological constant again. So actually, in the beginning, he was correct. So he just declared his error a little too quickly. The 1998 discovery of the accelerating universe earned the Lawrence Berkeley Lab's Saul Perlmutter half of this year's Nobel Prize, and his competition, Brian Schmidt of the Australian National University and Adam Rees of the Space Telescope Science Institute, split the other half. Now, what is this anti-gravity force anyway?
What is it?
Well, actually, theoretical physicists are trying to figure that out. Right now, they're calling it dark energy.
Have you heard that
dark energy thing?
I've heard that, yes.
They call it dark energy, and they're trying to use string theory, and they're trying to use all sorts of...
Oh, we're going down a road.
All sorts of stuff to try to... And so it's highly controversial, and the fact is, they really don't know what it is. They haven't really settled in on it. They're still trying to figure out. That'll probably be the next Nobel Prize. The Large Hadron Collider has inspired an Android app. Okay, you know the Large Hadron Collider. It's at CERN in Europe. It's a particle collider. They put protons going in opposite directions in a big ring, and then they overlap the tracks, and these protons collide with each other and make all kinds of particles. And this will be the most powerful collider in the world. And a Large Hadron is actually the name of the particles that it's the class of particles that they are, that they're moving around the ring, which protons would be like a hadron. Now they have a Large Hadron Collider application. The CERN scientists created the free Android application. It provides a live feed into what particles are being smashed, as well as a computer-generated 3D model of the particles that were created from every single angle. So you can see in real time the experiments as they're being analyzed by the scientists. The application has already been downloaded by more than 10,000 people. If you want to learn more about the science of the Large Hadron Collider, you can play with animated tutorials when you stream videos from your phone about the construction of the detector and the operation. One feature of the app is called the Hunt for the Higgs. Now, the Higgs boson is the so-called God particle, because it would help physicists explain how matter has mass. It's one of the few things that scientists hope to find out in the Large Hadron Collider. And they're looking at slides to try to see whether the Higgs particle actually exists. Now, this application is strictly available for the Google Android, and there are no plans to release it for the Apple operating system.
Oh, I guess I'll just have to lose out on that.
Because these are more open source kind of guys. It's like the university community. I think they're making a political statement. Political statement here. And, of course, now, and this week, too, by the way, Fermi Labs, we used to have the biggest collider in the world, but then we gave up the ghost. We let Europe take over, and we were there. And Fermi Labs was in Chicago. They're shutting Fermi Labs down this week, and so we've basically handed over the mantle of high energy physics to the Europeans. And I think that's a big mistake going forward.
That's it for this week on Tech Talk Radio. Join us next week here on Federal News Radio. In the meantime, learn everything you wanted to know about this show, including sending us emails by going to techtalkonline.com. Learn more about our sponsor, Stratford University, by going to their website, stratford.edu. See you next week.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take